But again, you see, I think it will come later, I think, maybe.
Can there be consciousness of consciousness?
Yes. Here, the see in
some systems of tenets assert self-consciousness or self-knowing.
For example, Chitta Mantra.
The in the mind-only system, they use the reasoning of there being self-consciousness as the main ways of proving that mind is truly established. So thus this is a case of a consciousness knowing a consciousness. However, all systems agree in asserting that whether something exists or not is determined by a consciousness. But by a valid consciousness. And with regard to establishing that consciousness as a valid consciousness, it is only in the prasangika system that this is done in dependence upon the object of comprehension. In the mind-only system, however, it is by way of a valid consciousness that one establishes the existence of objects, and then it's by way of self-consciousness that one establishes the existence of that consciousness. In this way, they set forth two types of consciousnesses, consciousness, one that's faced inward and the other that's faced outward. Consciousness that is faced or directed inwards is a type of consciousness that only has the aspect of being an apprehender, or not of being, of the apprehender. Thus, in this case, there is a consciousness of consciousness. However, in the prasangika system, they say no to all of this. There is no such thing as self-consciousness. They say that except for swearing that there is self-consciousness, there is no proof for it. However, they say that even though there is no case of self-consciousness, that is to say of a consciousness, what is the consciousness knowing consciousness, it is possible for a particular consciousness to know a to know another particular consciousness.
Now, for example, there's a certain meditation, you see, generally, in meditation practice, there's a certain meditation take an external object. It's sometimes not external object, but internal object, certain visions. Sometimes, you see the concentration going on, it's a mind itself. It's a mind, consciousness itself, take as an object and concentrate by another consciousness. So, roughly speaking, this is not exactly, you see, just consciousness,
So although it's not a case of a consciousness that at just the same moment knowing this other consciousness, it is possible for a consciousness of this moment to know a consciousness of just the former moment, or for there to be a consciousness of consciousness within the general and the particular factors of a mind. Please repeat the four reliances.
Tamashi.
The first is not to rely on the person, but to rely on the doctrine. Even though someone is famous or very well known, one is not to consider highly what that person teaches. Therefore, the first reliance, that one should not rely on the person but on the doctrine, means that one should look into what the person is teaching or explaining. Then the next is to rely not on the word but on the meaning, this being said because even if the words are set forth in some beautiful way, if they don't have proper content, correct content, then they shouldn't be accepted. And if something is set forth unbeautifully but has correct content, then one should accept that. Then with regard to the third, with respect to the meaning, not to rely on that which is interpretable, but to rely on that which is definitive. There are different interpretations of what is interpretable and what is definitive in the various schools of tenets. For instance, in the mind-only or Chittamatra school, it is said that that which is literally acceptable is definitive, and that which is not literally acceptable must be interpreted. And that which is not literal, that which is non-literal, is to be interpreted by way of showing the basis in Buddha's thought, the damage to the literal reading of it, and the purpose of its being set forth the way it was.
Oh yeah. Tapi umur dia ni tengah usia ya, na. Ni ada jaja canggih ni macam ni. Tapi di sana jaja canggih ni usia yang tu di sana yang dia ada. Kasih tu ke? Tapi terlalu betul. Kalau siang tu canggih macam ni tinggal dia ni. Tapi kan, jadi siapa kelang tu rosin pun ini naya.
And then in the middle way or Madhyamaka school, first they identify in terms of the objects of expression, in terms of the objects of expression, that which is definitive, the final reality, and that which needs to be interpreted, and the other phenomenon, and then say that any text that, whether it be literal or not, if it doesn't set forth the final mode of being of phenomena, is not definitive and must be interpreted.
Then
Therefore, the various presentations of the subjects that are the substrata for the quality of emptiness, these being the phenomena of many different types, conventional phenomena of many different types, these scriptures are to be interpreted in order to determine the final mode of being of those phenomena. Whereas those scriptures that set forth the final reality of emptiness don't need to be and cannot be interpreted in any other way to determine the final mode of subsistence of those phenomena. Therefore, it is said with respect to the meaning that one should not rely on that which is interpretable, but rely on the definitive.
And then, with
respect to the definitive meaning, one shouldn't rely on consciousnesses that are affected by dualistic appearance, but rather should rely on an exalted wisdom consciousness in which all dualism has been pacified. Therefore, it is said not to rely on mere consciousness, but to rely on non-dual exalted wisdom. What is the relationship between the rational analytical and the non-verbal? In the scriptures, again and again, references are made with respect to a profound experience as being unthinkable and unfabricated. However, it is also said again and again that in order to understand the mode of subsistence or final mode of being of phenomena, it's necessary again and again to engage in hearing and thinking. When it is said that reality is unthinkable and unfabricated, referring to a state that is passed beyond conception and analysis. What it's saying is that it cannot be expressed in words, what do you say, the experience of a superior in deep meditative equipoise on reality cannot be expressed just as it is in words. Therefore, it's important to know that there are three types of wisdom: the wisdom arisen from hearing, the wisdom arisen from thinking, and the wisdom arisen from meditation. And therefore, at the time of the wisdom arisen from hearing and that arisen from thinking, it's not a case of being unthinkable and without analysis. Otherwise, of course, there wouldn't be any such thing as a wisdom arisen from hearing and a wisdom arisen from thinking, right? And if that were the case, if it were the case that it were, what do you say, reality were completely inexpressible in all ways, then Buddha should have remained entirely silent, and the six ornaments of the world also should have remained without saying anything at all. However, they have spoken endlessly, composing, composing many, many books, haven't they? And it's not that they were explaining all of these things because there wasn't anything to explain. They were explaining because there is something to explain. However, when one is engaged in contemplation on that which one has heard and then puts it into meditation and gets to the point of developing some experience, then at the time of understanding, for instance, emptiness, there is a type of understanding that cannot be conveyed, that is not like that which is usually conveyed, say, by the word emptiness, the sort of verbal understanding that one gets from that.
Something like that.
Yes, that is unthinkable, inconceivable.
But the television is not allowed to children that are clouded, because she will be sure to do it.
For instance, on television, they're advertising many types of food and candies and so forth that they claim taste very good, but until you actually taste them, they're quite unthinkable, aren't they?
Unless you actually experience, you see, that taste, we cannot say, you may say, oh, it is very very sweet, that's all. We cannot say what kind of, what measure, right? Sweet, right? Something like that. So all these, you see, inner experience, the actual experience, that only knows by experienced person. The other cannot cannot understand, cannot know. So like that.
What is the investigation of time In the Buddhist schools of tenets, there are many different explanations and interpretations of what time is. In the Vaibhashika system, in the common Madhyamaka system, in the Prasangika system.
No, Prasangika, Pumimcha.
In the system common between Chittamatra
and
Sotantika. And uncommon interpretation in the Prasangika school. But in my reference to the investigation of time earlier, I was not talking about that sort of time. This sort of investigation is a case of looking into what has occurred in the past, what is happening in the present, and what will occur in the future.
Just like you see, when a historian, when history is there, sometimes when history itself repeats it, that is maumba sometimes, right? History itself repeats it, isn't it? Then there it is there.
For instance, an historian looks into the past time, and sometimes also, because history repeats itself, is able to see the future from it.
That's all?
His Holiness was speaking at length about signs of non-observation, but how could one understand or know something without observing anything?
Mm.
That this sort of non-observation is not like the sort of non-observation that we speak about with respect to emptiness. We're talking about here is the non-perception of something which, if it were here, would be perceivable. And then there are many divisions within that type. For instance, if you take as an example a person who has some doubts about the presence or absence of smoke on a lake at night, one couldn't say that there isn't any smoke because one doesn't see any smoke, because the basic doubt is coming because it's difficult to see smoke at night. However, if you say, if you prove it by another way, if you say there is no smoke on this lake at night because of the non-perception of fire, then that's a suitable sign of the absence of smoke, because even a small amount of fire would be very clear on a lake at night. So this is a case of the non-observation or non-perception of a cause, it being, I forgot one part, it being the case that a fire must necessarily precede the presence of smoke. However, if it were during the daytime, it would not be suitable to show that there wasn't any smoke on the lake because one didn't see any fire, since fire is difficult to see during the, if it was at a distance on the lake in the daytime. Rather,
sometimes I myself confused.
So in that instance, during the day, one would be proving the non-existence of fire by the fact that one didn't see smoke. Thus, it depends on the circumstances. At certain times, you would use a sign of the non-perception of the cause, or you use a sign of the non-perception of some other object that must be related with that which is being shown to not exist there. For instance, or if that wasn't suitable, one could use the presence of the observation or perception of something that was contradictory to that object. For instance, if you wanted to establish that there was, what do you say, if you had some doubt on whether cold existed or not over in that place, you could understand that there was no coal there because of perceiving a blazing fire, for instance. In this case, you are observing something that is contradictory. So here, it is in this context that one needs to understand non-observation, and it's not the sort of unapprehendability that's talked about in other contexts. Could you say some more about the substances which have always been present in us, which allow us to achieve Buddhahood? This involves the topic of lineage.
Buddha nature. The, how to say, the main consciousness. The consciousness itself, a main, how to say, the inner most subtle consciousness, is a, its nature, its own nature is pure. They all, you see, the, and the, it's a bad thought, or I don't know, you see, like, anger, the attachment, these are the secondary type.
In the mantric or tantric system, all conceptual consciousnesses are types of consciousnesses that operate until the deeper minds of appearance, increase, near attainment, and clear life. Thus, I think that the root of this topic revolves around this subject. And similarly also, all of us have some sort of compassion, there being a difference in the extent and so forth of it.
And also we have wisdom, or what do you call it, intelligence, right?
Intelligence.
Which can, distinguish bad and good, these sort of thing. Bad wisdom also, though very small, but it is a, how to say, the positive condition.
What is nirvana?
That, this is the third noble truth, will come. I think tomorrow, either tomorrow or next, day after tomorrow, that subject will come. Adarva.
Yes. As I said at the beginning, the 16 attributes of the four truths are posited in relation to 16 misconceptions with respect to them. With respect to the 16 attributes, the four attributes of true sufferings are impermanence, suffering, emptiness, and selflessness.
That the loshu, the loshu, the loshu, shicheni, kazade, sawa, dewa, takwa, tame, taotuba,
and the misconceptions with respect to these four are the conception that true sufferings are pure or clean, that they are happy or blissful, and that they are permanent, and that they are a self. Through the fact that the mental and physical aggregates have a nature have a changeability, disintegrating nature, it is established that the mental and physical aggregates are impermanent. And because this sort of changeability is under the influence of contaminated actions and afflictive emotions, the mental and physical aggregates are because they are under the influence of these other causes and conditions, they are miserable or entities of suffering. And so the meaning of suffering here is that they are under the influence of that which is other. Because the self is empty of having its own factually different basis from that of the mental and physical aggregates, it is established that it is not permanent in the sense of not disintegrating moment by moment. Because the self is empty of doesn't have its own factual basis different from the mental and physical aggregates. When the mental and physical aggregates change and disintegrate moment by moment, the self also must change and disintegrate moment by moment, due to which it is not permanent. And the mental and physical aggregates are selfless in the sense that they are not established as a self that's under its own control or an independent self. With respect, what do you say, except for the some qualms with respect to the five Samatthiya sub-schools which do assert an inexpressible self, some qualms with respect to whether they would be asserting this sort of selflessness, all of the Buddhist schools assert these four. Because what is being explained here is a type of selflessness that all of the Buddhist systems, low and high, assert. This explanation is not of the type of selflessness that is particular to the higher schools. In Shantideva's Engaging in the Bodhisattva Deeds, he sets forth debates on this topic with another person asking that if one can be liberated from cyclic existence through meditating on the truths, what need is there for emptiness? He set forth many proofs.
But that's not the topic at hand now.
Then
with respect to true sources, the four attributes are cause, origin, strong production, and condition.
tungi tumi dun zimbata, duchi kwane chaban zimbata, lo yu yo, ngondo sonwe kwane chabata. Da, da, kasa yini, rengshin ta la, nega midabar, nega midabar, da, da, dendrega da lo shu shishayi.
The four
Ti nyambo le ya, naba shishayi.
The four misconceptions with respect to these are that suffering is causeless, that the origin of suffering is only